Riffer was like our side chick. That is so true, though. We had a thruple with
a thruple.
Hello, fellow law nerds. Welcome to another episode of Boom Lawyered, a Rewire News Group podcast hosted by the legal journalism team that is thriving in sub-zero temperatures. I'm Rewire News Group senior editor of law and policy, Imani Gandhi.
And I'm Jess Piclo, Rewire News Group's executive editor. Rewire News Group is the one and only home for expert repro journalism that inspires you to take up a new hobby, like bullet journaling or collecting houseplants. And the Boom Lawyered podcast is part of that mission. So a big thanks to our subscribers and a welcome to our new listeners.
All right, Jess. We have so much cool stuff going on at Rewire News Group, and I just feel like I need to talk about it for a minute.
Yeah, please do.
Our new. I guess we should call her a staff writer. Is she still a legal fellow?
Yeah.
I don't know. She's a legal fellow.
She's on the team.
She's on the team. Like, she's fully on the team. Caroline Riley continues to crush it. She published this exclusive piece about a woman in Illinois who ate a piece of Polish poppy cake, poppy seed cake, went and gave birth, had the child test positive for opiates. Oh, no, she tested positive for opiates.
Yeah.
And she told the nurse, yeah, well, that's because I ate a poppy seed cake. And the nurse was like, oh, girl, me too. And then went ahead and reported her to child services anyway, which set off just months of trauma and humiliation, all because a woman had the audacity to eat a piece of freaking cake that had poppy seeds in it. And I can't help but recall that episode of Seinfeld, right, where Elaine eats the poppy seed bagel and is all like, oh no, I'm tested positive for heroin at work or whatever. I mean, this is a known problem, and particularly in healthcare spaces. I feel like if someone tests positive for opiates and they say I had a poppy seed muffin, maybe don't call the cops.
There's so many layers to this story, too. And please go read Caroline's piece. It is so good. And it really connects the dots between all the like garbage carceral policies that are out there and this encroaching fetal personhood that we have been talking about forever. For example, would it surprise you to know that this woman was at a Catholic hospital?
Not in the slightest. Not in the slightest.
And another thing, I have family in Chicago with, and this is a deep Polish community. So it's not like this is a rando event. This is like ingrained in the community. So for the nurse to be like, I had one too, still calling the cops, like everything about that is just wrong. Anyway, please go check it out. It is just, it's so good in like bad ways, but
it's
like great ways.
Bad. And another thing I wanted to plug was I did an interview with Lori Bertram Roberts, who is having a moment lately. I love it. And it's a great interview where she talks about how essentially the future of this fight has to be Black women, and that's going to require white-led mainstream reproductive rights organizations to take a step back. And also it's going to require funders and donors to think about how they're funding these sorts of organizations, right? Because she was talking about how a lot of these donors think, well, now we're focusing on racial justice. We're not focusing on repro justice. But racial justice is repro justice. Like, you can't have one without the other.
Right.
You know, and I just love Laurie. She is
a great
smart
interview.
And I'm just loving this whole year. I think is just going to be the year that Laurie freaking, I don't know, she might save Mississippi. Like, it's not an exaggeration to say that that she and the work that she does and the people that she works with, people like Robin Marty at Yellowhammer, they're really in the trenches working on saving Mississippi. So love that journey for her. I also wanted to shout out What the Heck Fire, who tweeted about Boom Lawyered recently.
Oh.
Listening to the latest Boom Lawyered, and when they were talking about the court's intentional slow rolling, I realized how often the quote, justice too long delayed is justice denied, goes through my head listening to law coverage the last few years. Hashtag MLK Day.
Wow.
So thank you for that lovely comment. I feel ya.
Yeah.
I feel you. It's
And that's exactly what's happening.
It's what's happening. But you know what? There's the other quote, you know, the arc of justice is long, but it bends towards, what is it? Mm-hmm. The arc of, some kind of arc bends towards justice. And all I'm saying is
the
that
arc is bending and it's going towards justice, damn
the
it.
The arc is bending and it's fucking going places, man. But the point is that we may be in a rut right now, but yeah. for some odd reason, I'm still weirdly positive. Mm-hmm. So if I'm weirdly positive, then everyone else should be.
Truly. Right?
Because, like, honestly,
it doesn't come natural to Imani, let me tell you.
It really doesn't. It really doesn't. And on that note, I have some concerns, Jess, and I want to address them to you as a white person.
Oh, I'm okay. Concerned wow. That okay, hold on. I got to sit down here.
Yeah, just maybe sit down. I don't know. Just get settled because I'm really concerned that white folks have just lost their minds.
Oh,
hashtag not
yes.
all white folks because not all white folks have lost their minds. I know this personally, for example. My mom is white. She's white as hell, and she hasn't lost her mind. You're white. You haven't lost your mind, right? You're not going to school board meetings and yelling about how reading The Bluest Eye has made your daughter, Olive, start talking in jive, right? Like, that's not a thing that's happening, right? You're not taking your 17-year-old son to go to book burnings.
No.
Where you're burning books by black authors and LGBTQ authors because they make everybody sad, right? No. I know my mom, who is Jewish, is not trying to turn the Holocaust into a couple of bad years that Jewish people had in Germany when they ran out of lox and schmear. Like, this is the sort of rhetoric that is going on in school board meetings across the country, right? This idea that we can't teach history. We can't right. teach American history. And by the way, Black history is American history,
thank
just
you.
In case anyone doesn't know. But these white parents are really concerned that if we teach actual accurate history, that it's going to make their white kids feel bad, mm-hmm. which A, is not giving white kids enough credit, right? Because white kids aren't going in learning about slavery, learning about the civil rights movement and thinking, oh my God, this is my fault. I tend, at least the white kids that I interact with want to know more, right? They want to know how to avoid repeating the mistakes of the past. But their parents, apparently, who are complicit in all this fuckery, don't want to teach their kids that, either because they're embarrassed or because they want to raise racist assholes. Mm. I think that's a bad idea. But when we start putting these kind of this panic, this white moral yeah. panic yeah. into law, that's when I get it. That's when I just, I don't like it. I don't like it. So I'm going to need you to talk to me about what's going on with your people.
Okay. Wow. I mean, first of all fair points, all very true. As the token white here, there's a lot to address.
I don't think you're the token white because it's just one of each of us. So are we just both the tokens of whatever? We're the token black and the token white.
You're right. It is absolutely wild to see the white panic happening across the country. And it's in direct response to black progress. And we just have to call it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, like we just have to call that. And, you know, you said it so well. Like it's one thing for, you know, parents to just be bonkers and like putting that into their kids. And that's terrible. And, you know, the school board stuff. But then this is starting to find its way into actual law. It's one thing to have preachers going footloose and like banning books and like all of that stuff. But it's another thing entirely to have state legislatures start to take up laws that would actually enshrine this nonsense into their code. Like Oklahoma. Can we talk about what's going on in Oklahoma for a little bit?
I think we need to because let's just focus the whole episode on Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Because Oklahoma.
Because it's the snapshot.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a harbinger of things to come.
Yeah. So Oklahoma. Look, I'm a Nebraskan. I love y'all. But what's happening? Lawmakers there are set to introduce this bill, SB 1470. Now, Imani, take a breath.
It's
going to get weird.
Okay?
It's going to get real weird. This bill would prohibit K-12 teachers from, quote unquote, promoting any position that is in opposition to the, quote unquote, closely held religious beliefs of students.
Okay.
All right. Anyone in violation would be on the hook for $10,000. Now, Imani.
Okay.
What if I told you that this nonsense out of Oklahoma can fairly be traced back to Hobby Lobby and the fight over the birth control benefit and the Affordable Care Act?
Well, Jess, I would tell you that I believe you because we've been covering this since, I feel like, the dawn of time.
Truly.
I mean, it really does. I mean, it's been a decade, but this decade has lasted a millennia. It really has.
It has.
And so that's what we're going to talk about in this episode. We're going to spend this entire episode talking about how laws like the one being proposed in Oklahoma share their origins with the conservative quest, this never-ending quest to ban birth control coverage in Obamacare, and how we can expect to see more bad laws like the one in Oklahoma in the future.
All right, let's dive right into this Oklahoma bill because, Imani, as you might imagine, I have some thoughts.
We have some thoughts.
Okay, first of all, it's called the Students' Religious Beliefs Protection Act.
Nope, which, I already hate it. I already hate it.
That's my analysis there. So as I said, it would empower parents and guardians to sue if a K-12 school or staff member was promoting positions in opposition to a closely held religious belief of the students. If successful, the parent or guardian can get an injunction and or $10,000, right? We've got this $10,000 bounty out there. And get this, the minimum $10,000 can't be paid by outside assistance like a GoFundMe, right? So if a teacher were to get sued, they can't raise money because, I don't know, they were like teaching the bluest eye. They can't raise money. If there's anything like that going on, then the teacher is immediately fired and barred from public school work in the state for a minimum of 5 years. Right?
I don't believe it. I really refuse to believe like almost 75% of the words you just said to me.
Okay. So there was a lot there. And, you know, we've been talking about this kind of stuff for a while. I'm curious, did anything jump out at you in that description?
Well, Jess, first of all, I'm a little concerned about you.
Oh.
Because you are a very smart woman. You are a very, very smart woman. And I'm pretty sure you either transcribed this wrong or got the law wrong in some way. Because you said that a staff member or a teacher can't promote positions in opposition to closely held religious beliefs. And that's not a thing, right? Like, usually the terminology that's used when governments are trying to protect the religious beliefs of people, like, for example, under the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That terminology is sincerely held religious beliefs. And I know you know that. So let's just take it from the top. Go ahead, reread the law, and let's just get that terminology right. All right, let's do this.
No.
What do you mean no?
No, Imani.
You gotta get it right.
Imani, look, I said closely held because the law says closely held.
But that's not a thing, right? Like, this, okay, the sincerely held belief test, right? This religious test in the Religious Freedom Restoration Act says governments can't substantially burden sincerely held religious beliefs. That's the way it's been for a really long time. And that was already pretty toothless, right? Because what the hell is a sincerely held religious belief? Courts have just been like, whatever. If you religiously believe that the sky is green, okay, we can't argue. So now you're saying that they're making it even more toothless by saying closely held. What is a closely held religious belief? Just anything you believe?
I don't know. What in the hell is a closely held religious belief? Imani, you are exactly right. We have a deep bench of case law around accommodating religious beliefs in this country, including, as you mentioned, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, or RFRA, right? And we used to talk about RFRA all the time during the Obama administration.
RFRA was like our side chick.
That is so true, though. We had a thruple with RFRA.
Thruple! And then the APA got upset, so we had to swap out the RFRA for the APA.
It got really messy. It got really messy. But we did. We talked about it all the time during the Obama administration because it was one of the main vehicles that conservatives used to try and push back against any progressive policy gains like the Affordable Care Act, right?
Right.
And one of the things that RFRA looks at is, like you said, whether or not someone has a sincerely held religious belief. Not a closely held anything. I'll get into that in a minute.
I just feel like the whole RFRA fight during the Obama years, right? Remember the dozens and dozens of lawsuits that were filed because President Obama just said, hey, maybe we should provide birth control without copay to people who get their insurance from their employer.
Do you remember the Excel sheets that we would swap back and forth? Shout out to Rachel Perrone.
Shout out to freaking Rachel
Perrone. Who was at the National Women's Law Center at the time. And we had an Excel spreadsheet that literally tracked dozens of people. Dozens. I am telling you, like, they were filing copycat lawsuits in any conservative jurisdiction across the country that they could. Yeah. Right? It was bonkers. Yeah. Anyway,
and,
I'm sorry.
And the whole, and everything just went off the rails, right? Yeah. So we should probably...
People may not know this
about RFRA.
Yeah, people may not. It's been a while. People may not know RFRA.
Yeah, let's go back to our side chick. Oh. See what she's. Hey, girl. Hey, girl. Hey, girl. RFRA.
Mercury is no longer retrograde.
Hey, girl. Want to come over? Netflix and chill. Okay. So, RFRA, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. It's a federal law that was first passed in 1993. It had bipartisan support. Right. Even organizations like the ACLU supported it. It was passed in response to this 1990 Supreme Court case, which you may have heard about. It's called Employment Division versus Smith.
Oh, I love this case. Can we talk about this case? This case
is
so good.
It's a great case. It's a great case. So in Smith, two Native Americans were fired from their jobs as drug counselors, and they were declared ineligible for unemployment by the Oregon Department of Giving Out Unemployment. I think that's the technical term for that agency.
It is.
Because in accordance with their religious beliefs and practices, these two Native Americans were using peyote.
Mm-hmm. And I, just to put some context on this, the Smith case came up in the height of the say no to drugs panic that this country was. Do you remember those commercials where it was the like nonstick pan and the butter
and
real
the
hot and then you'd crack an egg? This is your brain. Crack.
This is your brain on.
This is your brain on drugs. Well, any questions?
I love those commercials. I mean, I didn't love them because it was drug propaganda. I love them because they were freaking hilarious and schlocky.
It was just public health panic around, around drug use. And so the Smith, case comes out of that. And naturally, two folks are using peyote and according with their religious practices and,
all hell breaks loose. So
what?
These counselors challenged their denial of benefits, right? They'd already gotten fired. They just wanted Oregon to, help them out, pay them in employment like they do to most other people who are unemployed and if they qualify for the unemployment benefit. So they were arguing that essentially it was religious discrimination.
Right. But the Supreme Court disagreed, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, the court upheld the denial of benefits because the underlying unemployment statute was not, quote unquote, prohibiting the exercise of religion. And the religious burden was merely the incidental effect, the court said, to generally applicable and otherwise valid law.
Right. And while I 100% support anyone's right to go out and smoke peyote and just live their best lives in the desert, I do agree that in certain cases, there are generally applicable laws, right? We have a social contract.
Right.
We all have to adhere to certain laws in order to make society function.
Right.
We can't just be giving out exemptions willy-nilly to laws that are supposed to apply to everyone, right?
Mm-hmm. And that's what the Smith case said.
The Supreme Court said a person's private individual religious beliefs can't trump the law.
Right. Exactly. It's pretty clear.
Yeah. Well, needless to say, people lost their ever-loving minds after the Smith decision, notably not because it involved Native American rites and rituals, but because they saw the writing on the wall, right? They saw that this was going to be used to, quote-unquote, discriminate against Christians. So much so that we got this bipartisan RFRA. And it was bipartisan because there are people like the ACLU who were like, yeah, these Native American people should be able to smoke peyote. And then on the other side, we had, Christian, the religious right saying, oh, but what about Christians? What about Christians? And so this statute is essentially a super statute that basically amends every other federal law by creating this huge carve out for people to launch these religious objections to generally applicable laws, to laws that apply to everyone because we need them to apply to everyone to make society function. What kind of generally applicable law? Laws like the Affordable Care Act, right? Laws like the Affordable Care Act that said, you know what, businesses, employers, if you provide insurance to your employees, that insurance has to have birth control coverage.
Yeah.
And that launched a thousand lawsuits. I love how we're on the same
The page. Mandate that launched a thousand lawsuits.
Exactly.
You know, but yeah, because under RFRA, people businesses, corporations can violate generally applicable laws by claiming that the laws conflict with their sincerely held religious beliefs. And that was sort of the kicker when RFRA was being debated and passed, right? Because the concern was, well, I'll just, you know, anybody will claim this. And everybody's like, no, we're going to have a strong test. It's going to be strong, sincere. The test is sincere.
I mean, if you can't tell from Jess's tone of voice, strong test my ass, my shiny black hiney.
So under RFRA, right, the government can substantially burden a person's exercise of religion only if the government can show. So, right, so this is a law that like blocks government action, right? Protects individuals, blocks the government. It's a burden on the government. Only if the government can show that the law is doing the burdening is in furtherance of a compelling government interest, right? So it's got to be important.
Right.
And is the least restrictive means, right? So it can't, it's got to be sort of the, you know, in the list of ways that the government can go about doing something, here's the least burdensome.
Right.
That furthers that important interest. So they're taking constitutional principles. Those terms should sound familiar to people who've listened to this podcast for a long time, because they're sort of echoing constitutional principles of how we, you know, sort of establish and evaluate burdens on fundamental rights, right?
Right.
First Amendment. Right. Anyway.
So basically, you know, the federal RFRA, and then of course, state started passing state level RFRA. So it's just a RFRA, it's a RFRA party. Our side chick went and just started dating other people. So RFRA creates this huge loophole that allows folks to discriminate against anybody else they want to in the name of religion, right?
Yeah.
And this idea really took off with Hobby Lobby and the fight over the birth control benefit.
Yep. And that's really, like, this is the story. Because, you know, before Hobby Lobby, RFRA was protecting individuals. And that was fine, honestly. Like, most individuals, like, yeah, maybe you'd have somebody pop off and whatever. But, like, as a whole, it wasn't threatening large portions of, you know, domestic policy, the social contract, as you said.
Right.
Right.
And it was like stuff like, you know, if you're a Muslim prisoner and there's a rule in where you're incarcerated that says you can't have hair longer than whatever, and it's part of your religion to have long hair or to wear a turban or whatever, then those are the kinds of carve outs that RFRA is supposed to be for.
Exactly.
Not for big business.
No, but you know, this country, Imani, as you know, went and elected a black guy as president.
How dare we?
And truly, conservatives went off the rails and RFRA became, you know, their number one weapon. And this was especially true with the Affordable Care Act. I mean, it was such a big deal to get this you know, law passed at all, right? Like, truly, for folks who weren't plugged in, you know, don't really remember it. The fight over the Affordable Care Act was the electoral fight, and going into the 2010 midterms, the backlash against it. And repro policy was at the center of it. Getting abortion covered was a huge fight. Stupak Pitts for my Stupak. Folks all the way back in the day, you know, like. And the birth control benefit was this huge compromise, right? To just really, like, we won't cover abortion, but we'll treat birth control as preventative healthcare because it kind of is.
Because it is. Yeah. But, you know, businesses like Hobby Lobby. I care so little about Hobby Lobby that I don't even bother to remember the name of the damn store. Businesses like Hobby Lobby claim to have their religious benefits. Now, imagine that. Hobby Lobby, a brick and mortar building, is claiming that it, a brick and mortar building, has religious beliefs, and that those religious beliefs are being violated by things like offering employees insurance plans that don't charge extra for birth control. And the Roberts Court was like, yeah, okay. That makes sense. It makes sense for a brick and mortar building to have religious feelings. I mean, after all, brick and mortar building can speak after, you know, Citizens United. So right. why not make them subject to RFRA as well?
It's so wild. It's so crazy. I mean, you know, the Roberts Court greenlit the ability of corporations to raise their own religious objections to certain laws. And without going over the entire Hobby Lobby fight, I'll just say listen to the archives because they are deep on this. I want to zero in on a really nerdy point that I kind of flagged that was central to the fight back then. All right. So businesses as legal entities are organized in a couple different ways, right? And we talked about this so much.
We're doing a corporations class right now. Y'all get excited.
Look, I get excited about a couple things in the law. The APA and business organizations.
I hate business organizations, and I hate
the
APA.
This. I used to teach this.
I know. I love how we love absolutely different things. Anyway, moving on.
So businesses are, as legal entities, as I was saying, are organized in a couple different ways, right? So nonprofit and for-profit are one, right? Closely held and publicly traded are another.
Okay,
right?
I have a question because this I took corporations in law school and it was terrible at it. So what is the difference between a closely held and a publicly traded? Are you saying closely held corporations are never publicly traded?
Basically, yeah. So publicly traded are, you know, the things that you see on the stock market, on any, you know, exchanges, anything that you can, the public can go in and buy shares of, right? So you want to go and own some Apple stock, go own some Apple stock, right? Like you can do that. Closely held, though, there's still stock. There's still way that, you know, that's how you measure ownership, but it's not traded on an open market. And they are typically considered family businesses, right? Hobby Lobby is a family business. It is a closely held corporation, and there are a lot of them. There are way more closely held corporations than there are publicly traded ones.
And is that for religious reasons?
No, I mean, sometimes people just have them because they're small. They're, you know, like if like you and I could, you know, start a nonprofit and it could take off, you know, like doing whatever and decide and like actually sell a thing in that, we can organize as an entity and just, you know, have that. And rich folks do this all the time. There's a lot of tax avoidance reasons for it. I mean, truly that's part of it. That's a whole other episode. We're not going to go into that.
God, I don't want to talk about tax.
Because what's important here, no, we are not talking tax law right now. But what's important, back to Hobby Lobby, is that the court ruled that these closely held corporations could bring RFRA claims. So, like, there is a huge incentive to avoid something like complying with the Affordable Care Act now if you are a business. Why? Because there's a tax burden on you to do this, right? Like, and when the Affordable Care Act is passed, who is better to carry that burden? The businesses.
Right.
Anyway, you see where I'm going here. In the RFRA fight of yore, the two silos the court was looking at were sincerely held religious beliefs, right?
Yep.
And closely held corporations.
And so they
those just, were the silos.
Yes. Yeah. Sincerely held religious beliefs on one side, closely held corporations on the other. Okay, got it.
These bozos in Oklahoma suggesting a law that bans anything that conflicts with closely held religious beliefs?
Yeah.
That's a copy and paste error, Imani.
That's like a Mad Lib error, right?
They didn't read. They don't understand. This is evidence of bad faith, nonsense lawmaking, because this is a thing that doesn't exist. But if you have a recollection of the Hobby Lobby fight and the RFRA fight, you remember that we were talking about things that were closely held and sincerely and beliefs and like, here's your word salad.
The problem with making the standard closely held is that it can be literally anything.
Truly.
As long as you believe it really, really hard in your heart, right? So I can have a closely held belief that Black people born in 1974 on July 7th, that happens to be my birthday, can't get a passport or can't go into a particular store, right? And if someone is, let's say someone has a store and they're selling weed and I want to go in and I want to buy weed. And they say, you know what? It is my closely held belief that people who change their wigs every other day should not get to buy weed. And since I am that person, I'm on a wig journey lately, I can no longer buy weed. That doesn't make sense. Like if they say it's part of my religion that people who wear wigs are false idols and therefore I'm not allowed to serve people, like, you know, whatever bananas nonsense you can come up with, if you can tie it to some religious belief that you purportedly hold, then are you telling me that courts are not allowed to look at that, even though they already don't examine the sincerity of the held belief when it comes to the proper standard in RFRA?
Yeah.
Like, am I making any sense, or am I just losing my mind?
No.
I feel like I might be losing my mind.
You're rightly losing your mind because this is so bad. And like your wig example, sure, that is like out there, but we don't even have to go out there because, you know, the implications, if this is passed, is really bad. All right. Oklahoma's already struggling here. They're ranking 47th in states in D.C. in educational outcomes. And so Imani can talk about wigs and stuff, but what would this mean in practice? You know, there's a huge conversation around critical race theory right now. Would you be shocked to learn that evangelicals think whites are superior to black folks? Probably not. All right. So this absolutely, you can't teach evolution. You know, so it's really like what the implications for what this is truly finding a way to enshrine religious instruction, Christian religious instruction, because we know how that'll play out, right, in public education. And it's part of this quest to really break the public schools. And they're using this, you know, I mean, we've seen this anyway. It's real bad.
And, you know, and setting aside my silly wig and weed example, although wigs and weed are very important.
They are.
But if you think about Black history, right, if you think about the things that Christianity was used to prop up, slavery, for example, Jim Crow, for example.
Yes.
And one of the things Supreme Court justices like to do and judges like to do is say, oh, yeah, well, we're obviously never going to go back to a place where people can refuse to serve someone on the base of their race. But what in the law is to stop them from doing that now? If we're moving to a rubric where the only standard is closely held, there are a lot of people who closely hold that Black people aren't human, that Black people shouldn't deserve rights, that I shouldn't have to sit next to a black person. In the 60s, there were separate water fountains. Black people got thrown in jail if their leg brushed up against a white woman's. Like, this is regression
in
its most severe form. And so all jokes aside, this scares me. Right? Because this is what is going on with this critical race theory panic. And I'm using air quotes because the people who are afraid of critical race theory don't know what it is. This is what is driving, for example, banning that graphic novel Mouse, right, in favor of some more watered down history of the Holocaust that absolves white people from any sort of involvement, that absolves white people from having to feel bad or reflect on the situations that brought about such as something as tragic as the Holocaust. We're in that situation right now, by the way. Like, we are steeped in it. Book bannings, like, people are banning books, they're banning books in public schools, right? And it's a very, very scary time. And I don't know. As a Black woman, I'm not feeling too comfortable,
yeah,
I have to say.
I mean, I can appreciate that. And, you know, the fight over birth control, the fight over sex ed, all of this is what opened the door, right? Because we allowed, there were these stigma-filled spaces and you know, it is fine to give alternative information around sex ed. It is fine to have carve-outs for birth control and birth and abortion in public health spaces because of religious objection. Every time we created spaces and carve-outs, that allowed this door to open. And so there are a lot of folks who, exactly as you said, we won't regress to the point where people are launching religious objections against, you know, integrated schools.
Right.
I think that we probably will, though.
Oh, I think we absolutely will. And I also think that we are in this period of regression.
Mm-hmm.
And part of periods of regression require keeping the population uneducated,
yes,
unintelligent, uninformed of their rights.
Yes.
And so if we have, you know, a group of white supremacists, white nationalists across the country that are trying to ban any education of anything that does not make white people feel good, then you're raising a nation of sociopaths.
Yep.
Right? There are going to be some kids who are going to break free of that, and they're going to learn on their own, and they're going to become good people. And then there are going to be people who think that it is okay to discriminate on the basis of immutable characteristics like sex, gender identity, race, what have you. And, you know, it's a very, very scary time. We're in the eye of the storm right now.
Yep.
And all of this swirling around is leading to a very, very bad place. So I just want people to recognize that, you know, the conversation on Twitter this week may be about banning Mouse. The conversation next week is going to be about whether or not we should allow black people to marry white people, right? Like, it's going to devolve that quickly, and it makes me
Or whether
very
public
nervous.
Schools have to, you know, educate students with disabilities. They've raised right. religious objections to that. So,
right.
you know, when Imani and I say it doesn't stop with abortion, this is the kind of thing that we're talking about.
Yep, yep. And we've been saying it forever. Just this morning, I found a podcast episode from like 7 years ago when we were still called RJ Court Watch.
Yeah.
And we were talking about RFRA. We were talking about the expansion of RFRA to include sincerely held beliefs that are clearly not sincerely held because they are made up out of whole cloth. 7 years ago, we were talking about this stuff. We were talking about the ways in which the religious right is anti-science and anti-medicine, and how that is affecting children, how that's affecting children's public health. It's the COVID fight. We predicted the COVID fight 7 years ago.
Damn, let's get a mimosa.
Let's get a mimosa. Listeners, if you'd like to get a mimosa, you can share a mimosa, a virtual mimosa with us on Twitter. I'm at Angry Black Lady. Jess is Hegemommy, H-E-G-E-M-O-M-M-Y. You should follow all of us, all of our social channels on Instagram, on Twitter, Rewire News Group. We've just got constant out the wazoo. Mm-hmm. We are literally breaking news on Instagram. So if you want to keep up with what's going on Repro, head to Instagram. You can get all of this amazing Repro news in a swipe through, in a beautifully created swipe through. So please make sure to follow us. Please make sure to read Jess's newsletter, The Fallout, right? Rewirenewsgroup.com/The Fallout. She crushes it every week. It's amazing. And aside from that, what are we going to do?
We're going to see you on the tubes, folks.
See you on the tubes, folks.
Boom Lawyered is created and hosted by Jessica Mason Piglow and Imani Gandhi. Mark Folletti produces the show.